Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime! Another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotoyou.com. Shutters Inc. With Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 105 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuttersincpodcast.com, and with me live from the 100 Acre Wood, Shelton Tigger Muller. How are you?
Oh, no. All right. Do you want to explain that, Bruce, or shall I?
I'll just put the link in the show notes.
I hope the link's down. I'm not sure how long the newspapers keep links up on.
Oh, they usually archive stuff.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. Fair enough. So, if you're wondering what the hell Bruce is talking... Now, of course, I'm going to get you in trouble, Bruce, because a moment ago you introduced this show in a completely different way,
yeah,
using completely different language, yeah, and it didn't go to recording because the software wasn't going your way.
No, all right? It wasn't.
It was not... Okay, it was MA or X-rated in the intro, folks. I'm telling you, when his software doesn't go right, Bruce tends to get a little, a little rebarbative in the tetragrams. You know? All right, so that's got you into trouble. Now, as for my Tigger explanation, there was an article on me, an article about my photography workshops this morning in
the Melbourne Age
newspaper called The Age. Yes,
yeah,
which is a prominent newspaper here, written by a fellow called Terry Lane. www.dpexpert.com. He came to one of my workshops here at Montsalvat. It's all in my blog. And today, the article came out, and his description of me, it says, Shelton has a personality somewhere between Jim Carrey and Tigger. So somebody stop me! You know, I have a lisp apparently now, too. I bounce around on my tail, and I have a lisp.
Hang on.
You can't bounce the bounce if you can't even pronounce the bounce.
Yes. Yes, you are going to insert that into the into the podcast, aren't you? Yes. Yeah, fantastic. It's a great article. It was very nicely written. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek about my personality, but I'm glad he enjoyed the workshop. And he says that I infuse passion, my unfeigned passion for what I do, apparently, is how he describes me. So there you go, folks. So if you're over there in the United States and you're thinking, gee, we should get Shelton to come over and hold a workshop, now you've got this reference that you can use to fly me over and you know, give me the opportunity to let myself unleash myself upon you. it's terrific. It was really terrific. I'm very chuffed. I'm already getting emails from people saying, you know, hello Tigger and all that kind of stuff. So I'll do my whole thing with a lisp. And you are well, Bruce?
I am. Thank you.
Good to hear. Yeah. Good to hear. We've got some emails to handle today, and then of course we're going to talk straight away about the second part of a wedding day, and that is the ceremony. But last, shall we do our emails first?
Why not?
All right. David Kurtz, thank you for sending your email through. It says, hello, Shelton and Bruce. Just sending you this email with an idea for future podcasts and also possibly your new photo website, which, of course, will be unleashed upon you very soon. So you're going to be hearing all about that. And if it can be worked into the website, we'll see what we can work out as a special deal for Shutters Inc. listeners on that site. Anyway, getting back to David's email, sorry if you have discussed that. I have not yet listened to the most recent podcast. You briefly mentioned high dynamic range photography in the past. What you said at the time was that a good photographer should be able to produce good HDR images in camera without having to rely on post-production tricks. It is fairly easy and straightforward to create HDR images using Photoshop or other dedicated HDR programs, but I would like to know the best approach to creating high dynamic range photos without post-production. Perhaps you could give a step-by-step method for doing this, using a D200 and an 85-1.8 camera and lens combo, for example. Specifically, what would the steps be using fully manual settings to create an HDR image of a portrait or landscape? Just an idea. P.S. In my opinion, yours is one of the better photo podcasts out there, along with Nikonian's Image Doctors. Of course, we won't mention them on this podcast.
No.
That's competition.
Yeah.
No, they're very, they're very good, and they're making more money than we are, probably. All right. David, an interesting idea. Look, HDR is good. I have used it from time to time. But, of course, it can only be used with certain subjects. A static landscape where nothing's moving, a still life, a commercial photograph where, you can keep the camera firmly placed on your tripod, no movement in the subject, no movement in the camera, those kinds of things. But HDR has its limitations in things like portraiture, because no matter how quickly you photograph, no matter the sequence, you might do a 3-frame-per-second sequence, but a person will move. They'll blink, they'll move slightly in that time, and you will have a hard time doing an HDR portrait. Unless, of course, somebody's done it. If you've done it, let me know. I'd love to see it. But I'm wondering whether there would be any, loss of sharpness simply because you're combining images that will move slightly between frames. So, that's all I'm saying is the issue. I have no problem with HDR as such, and I think it's a fantastic thing. But what I suppose I'm basically saying is that you should try and do what you can in camera, and if that means using a grad filter in a landscape, using a reflector and or other lights in a portrait, minimizing the contrast range, those kinds of things. That's really what I'm talking about. But your idea is there. We'll put it over here, and we'll return to it so that maybe we can talk about it if it's something that others want to hear more about. Because getting detail and shadow and highlight is really what, we want to try and do to the best, degree possible. Certainly modern day digital sensors are, fantastic compared to the early sensors, and I remember, the step forward from my D100 to my D200 and now the D300 in terms of dynamic range is incredible. The new Nikon D60 has ADR, or adaptive dynamic range, which I think is just fantastic. I think it's certainly worth talking about. Maybe we don't just talk about HDR, we talk about dynamic range, we talk about the ways and tricks and means that we can, in camera and in post-production, get as much detail out of shadow and highlight as possible. So maybe, Bruce, we can put that aside for a subject that we can talk about after we're done with our weddings.
Eh? Definitely.
And as we speak, Richard, you'll find this interesting. As we speak, I have just received an email from Richard Annable telling me that I'm going to bite the bullet. Next time you do a wedding and would like an assistant, email me. I would love to come. All right, Richard, I'll do that. That's a promise. And also, Landon, you've just emailed me as well. I just got two emails in 30 seconds from Shutters Inc. listeners. We'll handle this other one from
Barry.
Barry, yeah. Barry's email was rather interesting. Bruce and Shelton, great show, !! I always look forward to the next installment, and they never fail to delight. I am curious as to why Shelton likes the 85mm 1.8 so much for his wedding photography, say, in comparison to a 90 or 105 2.8 lens. The Tamron 90mm 2.8, the Sigma 105 2.8, and others are superbly sharp, and a 105 offers a little more compression, which I would have thought would be an excellent mid-range choice as a portrait lens. Is it because of the faster aperture, or because the larger aperture creates greater background blur on the 85mm? By the way, I'm told from a Japanese friend at Tamron that the word bokeh, which that's how we've pronounced it here, as in a floral bokeh, B-O-K-E-H, a Japanese word, is not pronounced as in the Canadian A, right, which is how the Canadians say it. Hello, Walt, and all my Canadian friends. Canadian A. But rather a soft E, as in the sound of the E in the word bet. The term bokeh can be used for a number of descriptions, including one who is fuzzy-headed. So from now on, I'll be called Tigger and bokeh. I suppose you're right, Barry, but we also use the word, we also call it karaoke, when really it's karaoke. So, I don't know, is it just the anglicizing of Japanese? But I will try to remember that, and I really appreciate that. Bokeh. Bokeh. It's a Japanese word, and it means fuzzy-headed, too. I like that. I like that. I'm feeling a bit bokeh today. Anybody who's been listening to this podcast knows that I'm a bit bokeh today. Getting back to your serious part of your email there, Barry, thank you for that, is that I do love the 85mm 1.8, one, because I own one, and I don't own a Tamron 92.8, but you're absolutely right about it and the Sigma 105 2.8. Gorgeous lenses, both of
so
them.
So, I guess the question then is, if someone came up to you, Shelton, and you didn't own the 85 1.8 and offered you the 85 1.8 or, say, the Sigma 105 2.8, which would you choose?
I'd still take the 85 1.8 because there's more than a stop difference in the apertures. Also, the 85 is a Nikkor. It's designed to be sharp at 1.8. And that has and the bokeh is beautiful. It's designed that way. The 90mm Tamron is a macro lens, and it is a brilliant lens. It's a fantastic lens. And I think the Sigma 105 is as well. They are designed for different purposes, and so, right, you know, where they are at their sharpest is also different. Oh, I'm not gonna say I know about those lenses in terms of those things, because I've never put a comparison test between them. But the fact that we've got over one stop difference is, you know, important to me. The difference between 1.8 and 1.4, maybe, you know, I wouldn't really worry about so much. But when you've got something that will take you from a 30th to a 60th in an indoor situation, that's valid, that's vital. Or a 60th to a 125th, that's handholdable. All of a sudden, and you can work with it. And, you know, and the depth of field is even more minimized, and the bokeh is beautiful. If I only was allowed one of those lenses, you know, for all my work, that's an interesting question. You can, you know, you can have this or you can have this. You see, I've got the 180mm macro on the in the Tamron, and it's a beautiful lens. But the I still think I'd go for the 85 because I'm a people shooter more than a macro shooter.
Right.
But there is no reason that you wouldn't get beautiful results from either the 90mm or the Sigma, the 105. To be honest with you, my next lens, to be honest, if I could find one at a good price, it would be the Nikkor 135 f2. And okay, if I could afford it, the 135 f2 defocus, which is just, you know, it's an incredible piece of technology that allows you to, you know, set where your depth of field starts and ends in the lens at any aperture, sort of, you know, it's well, not at any aperture in terms of where it... Yes, at any aperture in terms of where the depth of field starts and ends. I mean, it will have the same depth of field, but you can move it forward and backward using the you know, the way this lens is worked. I mean, it's just awesome.
Okay.
But that's, you know, that's a lot of money.
But surely you just control that with your focus distance.
But if you've got to focus on a particular subject, you can, let's say your subject is a certain distance away and you have so much depth of field before and after, which is just fixed by the lens and the, you know, the optical laws of
and
depth
the
of field.
Aperture.
And
yeah,
the aperture, that's right. But what this lens does, what the Nikon does, the defocus, is actually moves the depth of field forward and backward. So I can choose to, you know, shoot at a particular aperture but move the depth of field. Such is my understanding of the lens anyway, not having used one, but having read about them, I can move that depth of field forward or backward so that even if I had to use a smaller aperture, I can still minimize the depth of field by bringing it forward if there was nothing in front of the subject.
I'm sorry, that just confuses me, because it seems to me that you would achieve that just by adjusting the actual focus point of the lens, you know. I don't understand how it's different.
Well...
Maybe you should talk to the guys at Nikon, let you play with one, and then you can come back and...
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to ring Nikon Australia and say, I need one to talk about on my podcast. But imagine just quickly, imagine that your depth of field is a blanket.
Right.
And, you know, your feet are cold. Well, you know, you just pull the blanket down. I mean, the blanket is the same size, but you're moving it to where you want it to be. So imagine if your chest is cold and you've got all this depth of field hanging over the end of the bed. What you can't, you know, it's no good to you there. It's like hyperfocal depth of field. You've got depth of field that takes you beyond infinity, in inverted commas. Well, you're wasting it. So with hyperfocal distance and your depth of field, say for landscape photography, you simply, like a blanket, pull it forward. That's what this lens effectively does.
So it changes the distance at which things are in focus.
Where it starts and where it finishes. The same. It's the same range, sort of, but it moves it forward and backward.
Hmm. Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Okay. That's just a great way to play, you know, with optics, and it's just a fantastic lens. If anybody out there owns one and you've used one and I'm wrong, please let me know. You know, I'm a married man, so I'm used to being told I'm wrong, and that's, you know, so it's not, you know, don't worry about that. But I'd love to actually use one of these babies and give it a try. But a 135 f2 would be just a beautiful next step up for me to, you know, again, as you say, Barry, even more compression and the same sort of speed, you know, 1.82, there's hardly a difference. Mm. So that would be the next lens that I'd love to have a look at. So, you know, look out, budget. I'm getting in the mood to buy me another lens. So thank you very much for that. Shall we go on to Landon's? Always
Jason.
Good to know.
Oh, you're going to do Landon's. Okay, yep,
sure. Oh, it just turned up. It's just bing on my screen.
Sure.
So he talks about the article, congratulates it for me. I love to shoot weddings and don't think of it as, oh, I have another one already. It's a nice, you know, nice way to talk about it, because in the article it talks about the fact that I'm one of the few pros who actually enjoys shooting a wedding.
Yeah.
I see too many brides, and I want to talk about this. Actually, no. I'm going to tell you what. We'll come back to this one because it's about wedding photography.
Okay.
And we're going to do that just before we push on. We push on,
sure.
Yes. So Jason's email is here somewhere. How was this shot? Thank you, Jason. Hey, guys. He says, I have a question about one of Shelton's shots. A great shot. Okay, so clearly you found the light and put her in it, but I was wondering what was going on with the light. Now, it's called Hallway, and it's on the audiotu.com website.
It was in the show notes for last week's episode,
yes.
In the show notes for episode 104.
And it's a picture of a bride in a hallway just adjusting her makeup, and she's just standing there in available light.
And quite strong light behind her.
Yeah, mm. Yeah, quite strong light behind. I'm having some trouble with the find the light and put them in it concept. I'm having problems determining what makes good light. Well, that's a podcast in itself, Jason. It really is. And we've talked about it many times, but it's an interesting question. Can you explain what is happening with the light in this shot? Also, if you have the shutter aperture ISO info, that would be great. Was the blur a post-process blur, or was it done in camera? Okay, a few questions there I'll quickly handle, Jason, but there's a whole bunch of subjects for podcasts right there. And look, maybe it's a case of, if you are a neophyte Shutters Inc. listener, you might need to go back to the, you know, some of the you know, you've got them all there, haven't you, Bruce?
Yeah, they're all on the site.
From episode one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe go back through the catalog and you know, have a look and see. But a lot of your questions will be answered in previous podcasts. But maybe it's time for us to start revisiting some subjects, Bruce.
Sure.
Okay, explain what's happening with the light. Okay, well, she's backlit by the front door, light coming in through the window panels in the front door. She's also lit from the light coming from the left side of the frame, the open door in the hallway. So you've got her backlit, so you've got light spilling from the light coming through those panels, bouncing around in the hallway, and then lighting her dress, and also just lighting her from the front, and also, of course, the open door is off to the left. Basically, that's it. There was no flash, nothing like that. I didn't bounce flash. I didn't do anything.
No reflector?
No, there's no. Only the wall is reflecting.
Right.
And, you know, I'm using just natural reflectors there. And it was just a case of metering. I had the camera on a tripod, and I took a few photographs. She knew I was taking her picture, so, you know, I asked her just to, you know, be patient with me for a few seconds while I worked out the exposure balance between, obviously, a heck of a lot of light coming through the background there, and the light, you know, quite a few stops under the in the hallway. And I had to find a balance between the two. But basically, that is the exposure as it was. I didn't sort of have to do a lot of HDR or anything like that. I just basically metered on the dress in the middle and tried to get some detail out of that. I knew I'd blow out the highlights, but not to the point where it actually causes an issue with, you know, the bride herself. The blur was Gaussian blur in Photoshop with a duplicate layer, Gaussian blurred, and then using the eraser tool, just softly erase the bride. And so she's sharp and the rest is just a little bit blurred. It really was that simple. No great miracle there, to be honest with you, Jason. Just a matter of metering it right, metering for a balance between highlight and shadows so that you try and keep as much detail between them as possible.
And what did you meter off? Like, did you spot meter on a particular area of the shot? Like,
yes, I did. I spot metered
the dress that's on your side, maybe?
The dress that's on my side, yes.
Yeah.
I think after that, I brought it down about a stop.
Hmm.
Just so that it wouldn't blow out too much, and I'd still have some detail in that shadow area. Now, if I remember correctly, that was shot on my D100, the dynamic range of which is far less than the D200 and far less now than the D300. So not too bad, considering.
Hmm.
Not too bad at all. So thanks for that, Jason. As for the aperture shutter info, I couldn't tell you other than I think... Oh, no, I couldn't tell you. No, I'd have to go back and see, and back to the wedding and find the exif on that, to be honest with you. But look, as for finding the light and putting her in it, what is good light? Good light is light that really, you know, complements the subject. And it's as simple as that. That's a lifelong lesson and one I'm still learning. You know, I'm still learning that one myself, and I've got a pretty good handle on it, but you know, you always want to learn more, and I'm always learning more about manipulating light. That is a photographer's life, Jason. And when you think that, photography, as we've often said, comes from two Greek words that mean to write with light. When a photographer really gets his head around that concept, his photography will take on entirely new meaning. That to write with light, that's what I'm doing here. It's not about the flower, the sunset, the beautiful model, the fabulous looking car, the football game, or whatever dynamic subject. It's about the light that it's in. Often, what you can do with the most ordinary thing, in terms of using light. In fact, at the end of the article on The Age, in The Age newspaper, Terry Lane, who writes the article, talks about the fact that, I was talking about that all day, find the light and put them in it. Mm. And then he says, look, at the end, I don't think that we can do wedding photography. That's what he says after doing this workshop with me. We will stick to still life capsicums and zucchinis, he says. But you know what? If he finds the light and puts his still life capsicum and zucchini in it, it'll just be a fantastic shot.
Yeah.
So, Jason, I
think I would go along with all of that and say that out of every piece of photographic advice you've shared on this podcast over 105 episodes, that would be the single most important one. And it's certainly the one that stays in my head every single time I pick up a camera now.
Thank you. It does me too. It's the first thing I think of.
Yeah.
When I turn up, as I was talking last week, at the home of the bride, I don't look for the most beautiful room necessarily or the most beautiful setting. I look for the light.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that light could be in the kitchen, in a hallway, in a bathroom. It can be anywhere. And if it's beautiful light, I can work with it. But you can have a gorgeous room with bad light and you've got to either manipulate the light, which you can sometimes do with curtains and reflectors and all sorts of things. But if you've just got a shaft of light somewhere, put them in it, meter it accordingly, and wham, it really works for me. And thank you for saying that, Bruce. It means a lot to me. If you're listening to this podcast and you still want to know more about what that means, let us know. If it has also affected you like it has Bruce, we'd appreciate you knowing, and any experiences you've had using that little phrase.
Yeah.
For me, it is the guiding light, no pun intended, for me shooting a wedding.
Yeah.
And I actually tell that to the bride and groom, because sometimes on a wedding, they're worried about what I'm doing. What are we doing standing here, Shelton? This doesn't look, there's nice flowers over there. What are we doing standing here? And then I'll say, look, I'll tell you what this day is about for me. This day is about light. And if you can trust me, you've seen my DVD. If you can trust me, then understand that that's what I'm working with. If you want photographs over here, that's fine. Because you have to remember, folks, that if you're shooting a wedding, they are the boss, right? They're paying you to do your job, but they are paying you. They are your boss. If they want photos over by the flowers, take them over by the flowers, but make sure you get the shot in the light. And you know what? If you really want to infuse them with confidence, you take the photograph, you do it properly in camera to the best of your ability, then you walk it up and you show it to them.
Mm.
When they see what you've done with the light and the metering and the combination of those two things, they just go, okay, whatever you say. Whatever you say.
Yeah.
Because they don't see light. That's not their job. They do other things to earn a living.
I'm sure that you have had that exact experience hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say exactly the same thing. When I shot Dan and Kate's wedding, I actually said to them before the wedding day, to me, photography, now after learning from Shelton, is all about the light more than it's about the subject. And there were a couple of instances as I shot Dan and Kate's wedding where they kind of looked at me questioningly on why are we here? And I did, I walked over and showed them the shot and they were like, mm-hmm. Okay, we get it. We trust you.
Yeah. It's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a good thing to do. People are always saying to me, why aren't we over there? There's love. We came here and we walked around and why aren't we over there? I was recently walked through, I've got a wedding to do in a couple of weeks at a place called Yering Station here in Victoria. It's a winery, a beautiful place, old buildings, gorgeous place. And they were walking me around and showing me the flowers and the trees. And then we went inside and I said, ooh, can I photograph in here? And they just looked at me funny, and I said, look at the light. I mean, it's just gorgeous in here.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay. And I just looked at them, and I said, trust me on this. Oh, okay, no, you're the photographer. That's fine, you know. But they'd seen flowers and trees and bushes and buildings and cool, which they would, you know, to them, it's all about how beautiful the subject is. And for us as photographers, it's about what you can do with the light. So from that, you know, and they were fine. There were absolutely no problem with that. But it's a good thing to remind them of. And while you're doing that, of course, while you're reminding them, you're reminding yourself.
Yeah.
This is what I got to do today. Find the light and put him in it. So, Jason, we are going to deal with that. If it's something that you are not alone in, and you're possibly not alone in terms of, you know, understanding, that's fine. It's a huge subject. It really is a huge subject, and one that needs to be understood if we're going to benefit from photography and really find ourselves in situations with ordinary circumstances, and we need to make extraordinary photographs.
Yeah.
That's another reason that I've fallen in love with off-camera flash, because if I ain't got the light, man, I can just make it. You know? And I have on several occasions, you know, as I've talked about in this podcast. If you've gone to my blog recently, I was on a shoot where I had to, and I think, did I mention this last week?
What's that?
I had to photograph this really boring water-saving machine, and you know, I the only thing that I could do was use my lenses, you know, my lens dynamics and my off-camera flash to create some interest. And if you go to my blog, you'll see what I've done. Backlit the water and used a fast shutter speed to, well, use the flash rather to freeze it. You know, used off-camera flash to create some shape and form and highlight, and, you know, wide-angle lens to create some dynamics. And it's interesting that you, Landon, have been to my blog and made mention of you know, what I talk about on my blog. Thank you for doing that. And we'll come back to your email in a minute. But yes, basically, that's a lot about what we're going to talk about today, especially as we talk about the ceremony. So we'll definitely do that, Barry, and thank you, or Jason rather, and thank you very much for your email. Now, Landon, I love to shoot weddings, and don't think of it as, oh, I have another one already, as I look forward to the event and the visual storytelling opportunities. That's a good attitude to have. I see too many brides complain, he says, that their photographer was a schlump. A nice expression, or worse. You know, I get that all the time, Bruce. You know, yeah. Like a bridesmaid will say, oh, I was a bridesmaid at this other wedding, or she might be married, and she might say, oh, my photographer was, you know, a schlump. That's the first time I've heard that word. I like it. I'm going to use it. I'm going to look that one up. That's fantastic. I love it. You know, like a bore, or, a, you know, some arrogant artiste, you know, like, this is my wedding, you know. And you think, why, you know? He says, I want to be their friend before, during, and after the event. I want the family to know who I am and what I'm there to do. I'm not just a hired gun with a camera. Good attitude, Landon. You are my kind of guy. I enjoy the control, even when you're not in control. Stay in control. Absolutely. Oh, man, you should do a podcast. No, don't. No, we don't have any more competition. And keeping things moving, fun, and pleasant is all part of the gig. Helping a bride with wedding details long before the event itself is something I always try to offer. Nothing like showing up to a sunset wedding with a ceremony 3 hours before sunset. Good on you for enjoying your work. And he's using Australianism there. Good on you. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that. Hey, we're catching on. We are taking over the world. It's a sad thing to employ yourself in the service of others doing something you would rather not be doing. Ah, yes. Can I quote you on that, Landon?
Yeah.
That is a fantastic philosophy. Your podcast series on weddings came at a good time, too. My wedding season starts next week, and always good to hear reinforcement on what I like to do and why. I took my cue to much of my approach to wedding photography more from your side of the pond. We are rather traditional in the US with our approach to wedding shots, and I like to keep things fresh as much as possible. I wanted a reason why I don't like the stuffy posed shots, and looking to Australia certainly gave me confidence not to stick with the norm here. New D300 and more available light shooting will certainly help me get to my goals for indoor weddings, specialized in outdoor weddings only up to this year. Good on you, Matt. Good on you. The Grand Illusion, which is the article in The Age. That's what it's called, folks, the Grand Illusion. And I talk about contrived spontaneity, which sounds like an oxymoron, but it's actually what we do. The Grand Illusion, faking spontaneity. I prefer to just call it guided spontaneity. And I might quote you on that too, Michael. Thank you. You're a gem. You're a treasure.
Landon.
It's Landon Michelson. Told you I was a bit bokeh today, didn't I? Prefer to just call it guided spontaneity, as you know you can capture moments as they happen, but often you have to direct some things to happen too. Do it well, and the event just flows and people have fun. All part of being the best you can be for the couple on their special day. So, and then he goes to talk about some other correspondence he and I have. And by the way, Landon, nothing to forgive, my friend. You're absolutely right. That's just between him and me, because he was talking about commercial photography. And I don't know why he needs, you know, why he's feeling like he, I need, absolutely. Anyway, shut up now. Okay. Okay. So, yeah, no, fantastic stuff, Landon. Really, really true. The article was talking about spontaneity, something that the writer, when he was at my workshop, seemed to pick up on. He says, now comes the hard part. We all want to take spontaneous, unposed, relaxed, natural pictures. As our teacher, that's me, as our teacher said, often the spontaneity is contrived. You have to work at it. The photographer is the director, drawing a performance, an illusion of spontaneity from the subject, which is where we shy introverts are at a disadvantage, he says. So, and then he goes on to say, I have a personality somewhere between Jim Carrey and Tigger. Okay. Somebody stop me. But no, you know, Landon, you're absolutely right. And Terry is too. You know, there is this guided spontaneity. And I was talking to a couple last night who did exactly say exactly the same thing. Oh, we like casual, you know. And I said, look, that's true. But I had to let them know but that casual or spontaneous is not always spontaneous. So, or it is spontaneous, but it's directed, it's guided, it's contrived to some degree. So fair enough. Thank you very much for that, Landon. That's a great email, and you use some expressions there which I wouldn't mind adopting as expressions for myself. If you don't mind me quoting you on them, mate, they are really well thought out, and it's nice to see you have the same philosophy. I find it interesting that you agree with me on the U.S. stroke Australia difference in how we approach wedding photography, and I'm glad to see that you are, you know, happy to break the rules, to step outside of what the boxes other people put themselves in. Photographing a wedding, you do have a process. You know, there is a little box of tricks and processes that you use to fall back on, but you should always be trying to think outside that, so that even if it's just for your own sake, you know, it's always interesting and always keeps you passionate about what you're doing. And so I'm really happy that you say that, Landon. I'd love to see some of your wedding work, and so I'm going to have to check maybe your blog or websites or other things to see. I don't know that I've seen your beautiful landscape work, but don't know that I've seen much of your wedding work, so we'll have to have a look at that. Maybe send us some. What do you reckon?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Now, we've left the home of the bride, and we're heading for the ceremony. And, you know, it's funny because this is often looked at as the most boring part of the day. And yet, if you think about it, it's the reason we're all there. And that's an interesting thing to remember about the ceremony, because if it wasn't for the ceremony, there'd be nothing going on. This is where the bride and the groom come together to do the thing that they have to do. And that's to say vows to one another and sign on the dotted line and make a commitment in public to other people and in front of, you know, in front of the God they worship and in the church they worship in, or in front of the civil celebrant who will document it. This is an important part of the day. All right, you know, they'll spend a lot more time maybe in their photographs, and they'll spend a lot more time at the reception. And sometimes people don't even go to the ceremony. You know, they don't see it as important. Oh, I'll just go to the party afterwards. That's their take. That's up to them. But the photographer can't think that way. The ceremony is an important part, and maybe it won't feature as much in the wedding album, or the couple will just sort of gloss over the photographs, but much will depend on how you capture that. So let's go through it step by step, because the ceremony is important and can be a great challenge creatively and just as a matter of capture to get everything. You know, it can be very, there are some challenges in ceremony photography that, you know, really put the photographer on edge sometimes. So let's talk about it. You should try to be there with the bride or before the bride if you can. If I'm not absolutely sure of where I'm going and, you know, and feel a little uncomfortable, I'll just tail the bride and make sure that I arrive with her. But if I can, I'll try to sort of speed ahead and get there a few minutes before her, park, Sometimes parking can be an absolute pain in the butt. And if I've got an assistant, I'll just sort of pull up outside. I'll get him to find a parking spot. I'll grab my gear and run into the church or to the ceremony, wherever it's being held. Just logistics like that to think of. If I can, I will try and get a photograph of the boys as they're gathered waiting for the bride. But if I can't, then I just can't. It will all depend on how much time I'm allowed. But make sure that you're there when the bride arrives, of course. And it's actually quite a relief for her to pull up and see you standing there. It's a relief for her. I couldn't tell you how many times I've been told that, oh, I'm glad to see you here. Because, you know, they don't want to go not have you there. You know, did you get lost along the way? All these things brides can worry about. So if you're standing outside the church, the temple, the park, the home, wherever your ceremony is being held, and waiting patiently for the bride, trust me, it's a relief. She'll love to see you. And again, you'll have that big S on your chest and you'll be Superman for that. For, you know, there you are. Ta-da! Okay, so she gets out of the car. Great opportunity for candid photographs while the bridesmaids are helping her with her dress. There's a little bit of, you know, girly giggle. There's some worry. There's a few, you know, expressions, timing, all those kinds of things. The bride is nervous. The last thing you can therefore be is a pain in the butt. She is about to walk down the aisle, usually very nervous. She's about to make the biggest commitment of her life. People will be watching her if she's a bit shy. You know, the whole walking down the aisle thing can be fairly daunting. So be friendly. Don't be too difficult. You know, just keep everything calm. Yeah, everything's going to be fine. And just do your photography. Be nice. Be friendly. Be calm.
If she is a bit nervous, tell her not to rush.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Actually, I do a couple more things, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But you're absolutely right, Bruce. You really are. But I'll take a photograph. I like to actually just slow her down, like you say. Mm-hmm. There's time, and you're only going to. But I also let her know, look, I'm only going to take 30 seconds. I get a photograph of her with her dad as they stand next to the car. Then I'll set up that. Then I'll add the bridesmaids for a second photograph. Then I'll say, you know, okay, that's it. I'm done. You don't need works of art here. You're just capturing the process. So set it up nicely. Bang, bing, bang, bing, and you're out of there. Then, of course, you know, you go in and you wait. But before I go in, I'll usually just sort of grab her hand and I'll just reassure her that she looks beautiful and that there's a fellow inside there who's just dying to see her and dying to marry her, and she has absolutely nothing to worry about. I tell her, just, this is your day, you just enjoy it. And, you know, and then once again reassure her that she looks absolutely beautiful. And I just say, I'll be inside waiting for you, and so will he. And they really appreciate that sort of just a gentle grab of the hand, just gets them to focus and be reassured. As Landon said, you know, you're more than just a photographer on the day, and he's absolutely right. You're there to be above and beyond. So what does it cost you to reassure the bride? It costs you nothing and does so much for her. So then you go inside and you wait. If it's a church, then I go down the aisle and I find somewhere, you know, a third, a halfway down, I find an empty row where I can just stand, or I just ask someone to move over if there isn't any, and I apologize, but I need this place, and they're happy to do it. So as the doors open and she comes down the aisle, you get photographs. Sometimes you have to use flash, you know, straight flash. Church can be a pretty dark place. But other times, you know, you don't have to. If you uprate the ISO a bit, they're not going to blow these pictures up to poster size anyway, so it really doesn't matter. You can shoot at 400, 800, and still use available light. And some of the shafts of light that come in from rear windows in a church, side windows in a church, churches are actually built to use light, and the photographer who doesn't see those, you know, see churches, particularly in temples, as great opportunities for shafts of light and metering, is wasting sometimes beautiful opportunities. So, you know, think of that. Be ready as the bridesmaids come down. Be ready as the bride comes down. As the bride passes you, I usually get into the aisle and then photograph a shot of her wide angle, and the whole church, you know, there, and, you know, get that shot as well. If it's a ceremony that takes place in a park, you know, or a backyard, a home, your situation is entirely different. You've got to be Johnny on the spot, though. You've got to be there, you've got to be ready, and you've got to get those photographs as things begin. Then basically it's a matter of trying to be discreet, but at the same time, you know, you have to do find the place to stand in, and then you get your positions. Here again is my 85mm in a church. My 85mm 1.8 is just my lens because I use it particularly during the vows. I will walk right round the rim of the church, particularly if it's a church, or some internal building, a temple, where the ceremony is being held, so that when the bride is giving her vows, I photograph her, off to an angle if I can, and look into her face as she's doing so. When she's finished her vows, I then, go around and photograph the groom or whomever comes first. I can never remember. But the first one to do their vows, bang, face on, if I can, get her as she's holding hands with her man, looking him into the eyes, get that shot, because there's usually... there's usually some very beautiful facial expressions here to be captured. There's tears or there's smile. Sometimes there's laughter. There's some very serious commitment happening here. So to capture that expression, and to be discreet at the same time is an interesting balance. You've got to be very careful inside places of worship, particularly because the clergy don't like you bouncing around the place. They, some churches, some clerics are a little more stringent about that than others. In fact, one cleric said to me, a lady minister, lady being a relative word, forgive my frankness, but this was no lady. She was a minister, but tell you what, the way she treated me was just awful. She first of all just called me a liar because I'm a photographer, so I must be a liar when I promised her that I wouldn't use flash because she was worried about that. And then she said, "You have three photos. I'll allow you to take a photo coming up the aisle, a photo of them signing the register, and a photo coming down the aisle. That's it. And if I see you take any other photographs, this lady was a cow. I'm sorry.
Reminds me of the comment by that U.S. senator from one of the southern states. I don't know if you remember it, but he said something along the lines of, "You can put lipstick on a pig, but it doesn't make it a lady."
Yes. I marveled at this woman, who represents, one of the greatest teachers, one of the greatest men who ever lived. That's what she says, in being a Christian minister. And yet
it's not being very accommodating for the bride and groom.
No, not being accommodating for the bride and groom at all. This was all about her, let me tell you. Now, admittedly, this is the point I make. She's been burnt by other photographers.
Yeah.
Who've come in and said, "No, I'll be good, I'll be discreet, I won't use flash, I'll be good," and then, tough, because you're in the middle of a ceremony now and you can't do anything about it, so I'll bingo bango away and you can't do anything about it. And that's very sad. So unfortunately, she'd been burnt by photographers, and so naturally, I was a photographer, therefore, ergo, I must be a liar. And I wrote her a letter, and I followed that up with another letter to her superiors, basically outlining the fact that she, as you say, was not being particularly accommodating to the couple who'd paid her good money to use the church, to be photographed in the church, and, to have her preside over the ceremony. But admittedly, she'd been burnt by other photographers. So don't do that, folks. You are in a holy place, and even if it's a backyard or a park, a ceremony is a sacred thing. Even if it's a civil ceremony, it is a sacred thing. Whether you agree with the religion, the belief, whether you're a marriage person or not, to the people you are photographing for, people you are working for, this is a sacred occasion. And they may deal with it in relative degrees of sacredness. But either it is, you have to treat it with discretion. And if you're in a temple, a church, a place of worship, if you are in a backyard with a civil celebrant, you have to be discreet, and yet you have to do your job. So don't bounce around the place. Don't get up behind the priest, on the altar. Don't stand too close. Don't get in the way. Don't make too much noise. And yet at the same time, do your job. Therein is the challenge. But it can be done. And it's a matter of having a couple of cameras, a couple of lenses, that way you're not rustling around, and, depending on how long you've got, getting the photographs. If it's a full nuptial Catholic ceremony, you've got time basically to go off and have a coffee somewhere. But you wouldn't do that. But it's long. But what I usually do is take an opportunity to rest. I also will, you know, set up a tripod just very quietly if it's a large church and do an available light shot of the church. I might climb up to a balcony and photograph down, because I know in a nuptial mass, a full nuptial mass, I've got that kind of time. Interestingly, in a Greek Orthodox, I remember the first Greek Orthodox wedding I did, and I was, you know, these are very ornate churches, the Greek Orthodox churches, and there are paintings and statues and crosses and idols and gold and candles. I mean, it's very ornate. And man, I was tiptoeing around and trying to be Mr. Discretion. And everybody else in the place, you know, has got their camera. They're standing like behind the priest, you know, on the stage. And I'm thinking, I can't get a shot here. You know, there was just, and I thought, oh, well, if they can do it, I'm going to do it. And so, and in the end, you know, the priest just sort of like looked at me out of the corner of his eye during the ceremony and beckoned me to, you know, take photos wherever I wanted. Which it was crazy. So every time I do a Greek Orthodox wedding now, at least in this country, I know that I'm allowed to just walk anywhere I like and they don't mind. But, you know, there have been other clerics who've been, you know, a little bit more guarded about where you go and what you do. So, you know, you've got to maybe have a few words with the priest when you arrive, or the cleric, the celebrant, and just let him know that you understand this is sacred and that you won't do anything indiscreet. I know this is a photography podcast, but this is all about the photography, because we're photographers and we have reputations and we have, you know, a service to perform. So while this is, we're not necessarily talking as much about the, you know, technique yet, this is a very important, very important point. And, you know, you've got to, respect it. Yeah, it is about that, because in the end, it is about photography. You know, it's a very important thing to consider. So to grab a few minutes to speak with him, I remember arriving quite early at the ceremony, actually. And the first thing, the priest came up to me, it was a Catholic church. And the priest came up to me and says, ah, you see by your camera, you must be the photographer. and I just immediately, I love the accent, you know. A Catholic Irish priest. I thought, this is going to be so much fun. He says, look, have you got a few minutes? I'll show you where the best photographs are, he says. And he takes me through the church. He says, this one over here, you got a great angle on the bride and the groom and their faces. We're going through the vows. And then you know, he says, now come around here. You can shoot right through the, you can, you know, and from here. And he's like an amateur photographer, this fellow. And I'm loving him. I'm absolutely loving him. And he says, look, the only thing, don't do this. He said, don't get on the altar. Don't stand up here in the altar, because I'll go through you if you do, right? And, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that anyway, I said to him. No problem at all, no problem. He says, I like you, you're a good fella, you know. And his ceremony was hilarious. I mean, he was cracking jokes, he had everybody laugh, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. One of the family members did get up on the altar with the video camera, you know, and he just immediately stopped the ceremony. Excuse me, would you get down from there? Right, just very serious.
Yeah, right.
And so as nice as he was, he was a priest, and to him that was a sacred part of the building.
Yeah.
Where only he as a priest could go. And that's what he believes, and I respect that. And as a photographer, you break that, and you're going to give us all a bad rep. So don't do it. So basically, that's it. The ceremony, you've got to be Johnny on the spot. Use a good, fast lens. You might need it. Make sure you've got a zoom. You can zoom in on faces, and a wide that you can, you know, you can capture the crowd, the people. Then, of course, you have the ceremony. You've got to make sure that you get each of the vows, looking into each other's faces. Try to get each face as it does so by, you know, walking around, getting a different viewpoint. The exchange of the rings, and then be ready for the kiss shot. Now, some kisses are over and done with in a split second, and others, you know, you think, get a room, man, you know, please. you know, you got to be ready for that shot. Then there's the signing of the register, and that will take place either right in front of you, or they'll go into a vestry area, and you know, I will always do two things there. I'll get candids of the signing of the register, because there's usually a lot of laughing, a lot of interplay between the bride and groom and the witnesses as they sign. There's usually a giggle or two. And then there's usually some lovely looks that the bride and groom give to each other, because they're basically looking at each other and saying, guess what? We're married. And there's little smiles, little interactions that, if you can capture, make beautiful photographs, just as candids. Very important. The other thing, of course, is that after that, if you've had a chance, tell the priest, the celebrant, that you want to take a set-up photograph. Now, they normally know to do that anyway, but just remind them that when he's finished his job, you just want a couple of minutes, if possible, to set them up nicely and do a photograph of them close, and then come back and get a context shot. Don't take forever. He's got a job to do, and just get it in, get it done.
And this may not be the only wedding he's got to do that day.
Exactly. So, exactly, Bruce, spot on.
My grandfather was a minister.
Oh, was he? Yeah. Okay, there you go. There you go. So, yeah, they are there on Saturdays and Sundays, very busy with weddings. So, get it, you know, and he's got a job to do, you know, and you don't want to be holding up the whole process, getting it all perfect. Set the bride and groom up close together, either sitting down if they were sitting or standing if they were standing. Close the distance that naturally comes between them because, you know, people have personal space even with the one they love. Close the gap. Give him a pen if he's right-handed. Give her a pen if she's left-handed or vice versa. And, you know, get them and just nice straight down the barrel signing the register shot. Okay, it's contrived. It's corny. It's set up. But it's done. You've got it. And they actually like it. So, you know, that's basically it. After that, the bride is handed and the groom is handed their wedding certificate. That's what's done here in Australia anyway. And so there's a shot there. You usually get a little bit of funny interaction with the celebrant, whether he be a priest or civil celebrant. There's always time for laughter. There's a lot of laughter in ceremonies these days, and it's a great thing to capture. And then, of course, there's the coming down the aisle. Now, that will happen different ways, but after they're married, sometimes they will just march straight out of the church, and I find that I'm just like 5 feet ahead of them, and I'm walking backwards. If anything's behind me, look out, because I can't see. I'm just walking backwards, and I'm photographing them as they smile, and they laugh, and they interact with people as they're coming down the aisle, and, you know, the bride is getting those things put around her wrists that everybody gives her, and they're shaking hands and kissing. That's a great series of photographs as well. And then, of course, because you're walking backwards, just be careful. You know, I have tripped over children before. sorry, kid, you know. And then outside the church or, you know, out from the area where it's taken place, usually there's a little bit of rah-rah, and you get your photographs of them as they're kissing and hugging the family and friends as they come out of the church or as they gather around the couple in the park or wherever it may have happened. Now, just to finish today's podcast, this is a very important part of your wedding day. The post-ceremony congratulations yield some of the most revealing photographs, some of the most precious photographs of the wedding, as people's emotions come to the fore. Parents, siblings, good friends leap, they lunge at the bride and groom often with big hugs and kisses and jokes. There's handshakes, there's tears, there's kisses. If you're far away, you're going to have a problem. If you're getting back with the telephoto lens, you're going to have a problem because people will get in your way, not knowing that you've pinpointed the bride and groom and you're trying to get photographs. So I get in tight. You know, I'm 2-3 feet away from the bride and groom with a wide-angle lens. That way, no one can get in front of me, and those who want to kiss and hug, I just let them kiss and hug, and bang, 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 shoot away. And, you know, have it set on a motor drive sequence so that as the expressions happen, as mum lunges towards her new son-in-law or father towards his daughter, you know, you get all of those great shots. And often I'll hand over a wedding where I've set up beautiful photographs, found the light and put them in it and all that kind of stuff. And yet often what they look at and treasure the most in certain ways are the candid post-ceremony hug and kiss congratulations photographs, because this is the moment captured where dad kisses his daughter and he says, okay, well, you're his now. You're not mine, my little girl anymore. And those moments are important to capture. And you have to be sensitive to their feelings as a person and ready as a photographer to capture them. So, you know, and then after that, there's family group photographs. We'll talk about that, you know, another time. That's pretty simple. But basically, that's it. And again, if you've got questions about the ceremony from a technical level, it's hard to answer because every ceremony is going to be in a different place, a different, you know, context, and they can be very difficult to talk about technically. But procedurally, that's basically what you've got to be ready for. And, you know, therein is the challenge. But don't ever think that it's not an important thing, because it's a very important thing to capture the ceremony and to capture it well.
I think a lot of it comes down to discussing with the bride and groom before the wedding day exactly what the sequence of events is going to be.
Yep, Absolutely, and it should be something that you do prioritize in the discussion, especially if the couple is going to have a religious ceremony with certain traditions. Always ask about those, and be discreet, be respectful, and make sure that you can capture them if possible. And yes, what is the run of their ceremony? And if you can, contact the cleric before the wedding and say, I'm going to be Brian and Julie's photographer on Saturday the 14th. I just wanted to let you know I respect your place of worship, and I won't do anything indiscreet, but I understand that everybody has different parameters. What are yours? Where am I allowed to? Where am I not allowed to? What is your preferred run of things? You can't go into these places and take over, because you're in his place now. You're in his house now. And even if it's the celebrant in a park, it's his gig there. He's got the most important job to do. He's going to marry the couple. That's why we're there. So, you can't be so arrogant or presumptuous as to take it over and think that it's your gig. You're there to capture what's happening. Basically, you can't be doing much more than that. If you do more than that, you find yourself on the wrong end of people and you make an ass of yourself.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for all of that.
My pleasure. Long one today.
Yep.
You might have to edit all the rubbish out, man. Nice to talk to everybody, and please, we do appreciate your correspondence. It's fantastic to hear from you and keep it up. Really great.
Absolutely, and if you want to email Shelton, it's shelton@audiotoyou.com, or you can email me, studio@audiotoyou.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, mate, and thanks to everyone out there. We're going to keep you posted, of course, on my new website, the tutorial website, and other great things that are happening.
Absolutely. One thing I do just want to mention briefly before we go is that I'm copping some grief from my wife for not promoting myself enough. So I just want to mention to anyone who listens to this podcast, if you are also a podcaster or you happen to know other people who create their own podcasts, my wife wants me to mention to everybody that I am available to help with audio engineering, mixing promos or, building sweepers or intros and outros to podcasts and things like that. So if you want some help with some good imaging for a podcast, drop me an email.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Because nobody does it better.
Absolutely.
Wasn't that a song? Nobody does it better. Yeah. Makes me feel sad for the rest.
Didn't LJ Hooker use that as an advertising campaign out here?
Yeah, and LJ Hooker has the unfortunate name attached to being a real estate agent.
Mm.
So, use that song. Hooker and that song, I just don't think it goes very well. But seemed to work for him. He's making more money than I am.
Yeah. Well, mate, we'll talk with you next week.
You bet, mate.
See ya.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.